About 2,900 people at the height of our season. We have about 150 year-round staff. indeed for predict news, we'll be growing in a few years because we've expanded our terrain by more than twice what we have now. So excited to be on this and learn. I've already learned so much in the 2 hours I've been here, so it's been great. So.
I had no idea you were 2,900 people at the highest season. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So great. So great to have you. And then also, Natalie Randall will be joining us. She's with the State Office of Tourism, but she resides in the very southeast part of the state, where the tourism is great and the Wi-Fi and satellite is not. And so she's not somewhere today where she can join us. She has some work obligations, but we'll have her introduce herself in January when she joins us. We're very excited to have her join us. As we know, tourism and recreation is a giant part of our economy. So I'm grateful to have all four of them joining us. They did get a big fire hose this morning of information. And Joey was joking in a little bit at me that all the information they got was probably relevant for all of us. But if we hear one more time, we probably could have all done with that orientation again. So if you want to know what we do as a board, they know. And they can help you out if you've forgotten in any way. A few things that will be coming up and changing. I've asked the executive committee to really look at of each of their committees individually. We have a new org chart that's coming out that will help outline for the board a little bit more how everybody flows through in the different buckets. So if you start hearing from your committee chair and just checking in with you, that's what they're doing. We've also designated, instead of, if you remember Kim, and she's still with us, she's just not with us today. Kim and Nicole and Lindsay have been supporting the committee work a lot, but we decided to put an individual staffer with each committee so that they have a designated person and can really concentrate and focus on that. So youth committee will have Lindsay, that's the table. Lindsay Fruit Grove with the youth committee, and then Amira, oh, right there, is going to be supporting Jennifer Saunders and her group with career pathways. And I should mention, since we're doing that, I don't think it's in my agenda, Jennifer Saunders has taken on career pathways for Jim Boyd since he retired, and then Matt Wu is taking on the youth committee. They may be engaging with you to either recruit you away from your current committee or to get you on a committee, but they
keep all the transfer portal.
Yeah. A little horse trading here and getting this committee staffed up for January. Apprenticeships will continue to be Alexia, today, and Melissa, of course, the commissioner, will also support that committee. Heather is going to be supporting operations for Gary and Dan's team. And then Stacy is supporting Deanna with the Individuals with Disabilities group as well. So we're going to really just hone that in and have one self-staffer in addition to all of your other support staff up with your committee, so that you have one point person that you can go to and get that information. Any questions about that? Okay. And Nicole will be, and I shouldn't say will be, she has been providing a tremendous amount of support to the board in addition to Kim. And Kim's going to primarily focus just on the state plan that we're going to talk about. Hopefully everybody remembers the real plan, which covers what we're doing here, and then also the one-stop certification. So, let's see. Okay, that's it. Any questions about, there was a lot of stuff. All right, any questions online about anything? Michael, sad to not see your face here in person. Dan Walker.
I know. Yeah, I've got other meetings, and it was just too hard to get there, and then I might have to bug out a little early, but yeah.
That's okay. So I appreciate all of you being here. It's totally great. Okay, I need everybody have a copy of their minutes in their packet or if it was there online. Because we have so many online, you are going to have to say yay or nay, because I have to have a quorum or we're going to have to send out a vote for minutes, and we do not want to do that. So Everybody has a copy of their minutes. I need a motion to approve the minutes from our July 13th meeting. Thank you, Shannon. And a second from Deanna. Any comments about the minutes? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Awesome. I saw eyes and hands all the way across. That's so good. Any opposed? Okay, so moved. Okay. Oh my gosh, I have a lot. Like, this whole first part of the agenda is just going to talk. Okay. So, except we're going to watch a video.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, hopefully, let me back up. There is an acronym for those people that are here that might not be on your acronym list that we gave you. Is NGA on the acronym list? Okay, so the National Governors Association, which we talked to about before, does anybody not know what the National Governors Association is? It's okay if you raise your hand and don't know. Or are brave enough to do so. So the National Governors Association is an association for governors. I think I mentioned it before, but it's designed, they have a chair and a co-chair that rotates out annually, and they rotate out so that there's always either a Democrat or a Republican in the chair or co-chair seat, so there's never two Republicans or two Democrats, and they worked very closely together as a group on initiatives. Last year, I believe, was the governor from New Jersey focused his efforts. If you're a chair of the National Governors Association, you get an opportunity to kind of have a platform and start almost campaign around an initiative that you want to focus on for the year as the National Governors Association. And last year, New Jersey focused, I believe, on mental health abuse, I believe, is what they did. People like, But this year, Governor Cox is actually the chair of the National Governors Association, and hopefully in your social media feeds or in anything else, you've seen his campaign on Disagree Better. So if you haven't, we're going to watch a couple of scenes. But that is his campaign this year on just being kind and civil to each other. And as part of one of the governor's boards, that's what we are, I think it's important for us to understand what his mission is this year as the chair of the National Governors Association and support his mission to Disagree Better. So if you haven't had that opportunity, we're going to watch a couple of short clips about that. And then I can start talking.
Governor of Utah and chairman of the National Governors Association. You and I probably disagree on a few things, and that's okay. It's actually good for us, but it's way too easy to let our differences become toxic. Our country is deeply divided, and most Americans are tired of the division. Disagreeing better, not disagreeing less, is the answer. When we engage in healthy, honest dialogue, we avoid demonizing others, and we're more likely to find solutions. And I'm not just talking about civility. Being nicer is important, but I'm talking about learning the right kind of conflict. Instead of calling names, be curious. Listen more. Attack ideas, not people. Treating each other with respect and dignity instead of contempt can be hard, and I don't always get it right. But over the next year, I'm hoping we can work together to do better. Democrats and Republicans, liberals, conservatives, and everything in between, please join us. And remember, nothing is less American than hating our fellow Americans. But harnessing our differences to get things done, that's as American as it gets. I'm Spencer Cox, Republican Governor of Utah.
And I'm Jared Polis, Democratic Governor of Colorado.
And we're here to help save your family dinners.
You know what we're talking about.
You're halfway through your second helping of mashed potatoes when your MAGA uncle decides to share his thoughts on the latest election conspiracy.
We all have that uncle.
Or instead of passing the salt, your woke niece passes along a particularly controversial fact that she read on social media.
Or maybe you're the one with the strong opinions. You know you're right. And the other side is a bunch of misguided weirdos. But there's a healthy way to deal with conflicting opinions. Actually, it's okay to disagree.
It's not just okay, it's crucial.
Did you just disagree with me about disagreeing?
Healthy disagreement means not assuming that the other side is deluded, misinformed, or actively trying to overthrow America.
A little respect and curiosity keeps resentment off the dinner table.
And out of your social media feeds.
Our nation was founded by people who profoundly disagreed.
So next time your uncle, your niece, or anyone else brings up that one topic that just drives you nuts, take a deep breath.
Be curious. Ask questions. If you still disagree, that's okay. But you might find that you aren't as far apart as you think.
Conflict isn't bad. It's the way we disagree that matters. Please join us in showing America the right kind of conflict.
Together, we can disagree better.
I would describe my political views as the new right.
I say that I'm left.
Feminism today is man-hating.
I would describe myself as a feminist, 100%.
I don't believe that climate change exists. We're not taking enough action on climate change.
I think it's about time these people got off the high horse and started looking for credible problems that actually exist.
It's absolutely critical that trans people have their own voice.
That's not right. You can't, you know, you're a man, be a man, or you're a female, be a female.
Women do need to remember that we need you to have our children.
Could I be friends with someone that says a woman's place in the home?
Right, okay, well, I'm an expert at flat packs. If you have any trouble, just watch me.
So it looks like I've got your instructions here.
I think so.
Let me help you. Let's have just that bit there. Describe what it is like to be you in 5 adjectives.
Okay. Frustrating.
Dedicated.
Opinionated.
Lucky.
Ambitious.
Offensive.
Solemn. I have ups and downs.
Strong.
I was trying to say attacked. Misunderstood.
Name 3 things you and I have in common.
We're both male, we're both confident, and we're both loudly spoken.
We know each other better than people who've known each other for 10 minutes should.
You seem quite ambitious and positive, and you've got this really, got a glow. Your aura's pretty cool.
I'm sensing. Are you former military or something?
People have said that, but there is no,
really?
There is no history. So are you then?
Ex-military?
Yeah. If you're ex-military, I'm very proud of you already.
Well.
So. I grew up in a bit of a rough state. I've experienced homelessness. I've known what it's like to have absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm definitely most grateful just for life.
We've only just met, but I think you're the sort of person that would listen to me and we'd have a discussion rather than argue.
Yeah, you could hang out with, man. Let's go. My chance.
Goodness sake. You're right, mate.
It's fitter than I look. Perfect.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Basically, I thought we just bought a bar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here you are. Each take a bottle and place it on its corresponding markings on the bar.
Attention, please now stand to watch a short film.
Feminism today is definitely an excuse for misandry, man-hating.
If somebody said to me that climate change is destroying the world, then I'd say that is total piffle.
So transgender, it is very odd. We're not set up to understand or see things like that.
I am a daughter, a wife. I am transgender.
I feel like the battle for feminism definitely isn't done. The fight is never going to be over, if I'm honest with you.
You have a choice. You may go, or you can stay and discuss your differences over a beer.
I'm only joking.
Well, I'm having a drink. I'm having a drink.
Yeah.
I want to discuss.
Beer.
Yeah, beer and discuss.
Cheers.
At the end of the day, mate.
About reaching out to people, yeah. And, you know, even if you wanted to convince people about your point, the productive thing to do would be to sit down and have a beer.
Engage, engage.
I've been brought up in a way where everything's black and white. But life isn't black and white.
Yeah, I'm just me.
Yeah.
Smash the patriarchy.
I'll give you my mobile number, you give me yours, and we'll keep in touch. I'd have to tell my girlfriend that I'll be texting another girl. She might be a bit upset with that, but I'll have to get round to her.
I'll have to tell my girl
that she left her. Oh my god, super uncomfortable, right? Oh, two-thirds of that movie. See what's gonna happen. That's great. So, I might get a little bit emotional about that, but I had the opportunity to be in Parowan High School with the governor. I think I mentioned this last meeting when he was traveling to one high school in each county. Parowan was the lucky winner in Iron County to come and promote his campaign to the youth at the high school. And he asked, he had the kids sit down. And there was, you know, 5 or 6 kids on stage, and he said, give me one word that describes what you think the United States is right now. And they came up with words like turmoil, discontent, unhappy, just, and there was no positive words that came out, nothing. And it's hard for me to sit back and see our youth think that that's what's happening. Very proud of the place that we live. I'm very proud of the state we live in. But to hear our future generations feel like we've broken their country breaks my heart. And so whatever you can do to champion this in your workforce, in your circles, in your networks, please do that as much as you can. I think the governor has until the end of June to push this as far as he can. I know he's actively making some additional campaigns and working through the country with other governors and states to get this message pushed out beyond our borders. So whatever you can do to champion them, share them in your homes, in your college, have a great constructive conversation with somebody and post it with hashtag disagree better. That would be great. Any questions about that campaign? Hopefully all of you have at least seen one of those. I did not see the Heineken commercial. That's the first time I've seen that. But the other two I've seen. So thank you. Also, I just wanted to report out, I had the opportunity to go to the National Governors Association meetings for state workforce boards. So chairs from all over the nation are at this meeting. They chose North Dakota as our location. And it's okay, I have to tell you, when I got the announcement that that's where we were going, I was like, what happened to Hawaii? I'm pretty sure we talked to my comrade in Hawaii, and that's not where we ended up. But I have to honestly tell you that Fargo, North Dakota was an absolute delight, and was shocking. Nicole was with me. We had a wonderful time. That state's incredible. They're doing some really neat things. They definitely showed up. But I did have the opportunity to meet with other chairs, Wisconsin, Illinois, New York, you know, Arizona, California, and just talk about what's going on in their states and the challenges that they're seeing. Obviously, they're seeing some of the same things we are. A lot of discussion around affordable care for children so that people could be at work. A lot about the aging workforce, a lot about youth. One thing that we did talk about, though, which will be a good help, and I will say, and I'm not just saying this because I chaired the state of Utah, but Utah really has their act together. I can see some of the states struggling with things, particularly with the WIOA plans that we have to recertify every 2 years. The National Governors Association is coming out with support tools for boards like us to help build their plans. The other states are very excited about those tools coming. They're coming. I don't really think we'll utilize those tools. I kind of feel like we're already doing okay. I'm sure Nicole and Liz will look at those to see if they will be helpful, but we're doing a good job in that regard. So, good conference. We're, of course, leading out in a lot of ways and grateful for the leadership we have in the state to do that. So, I have to keep talking. Anything, any questions about NGA or new members or anything in that regard? Okay. The next thing is our annual report, which I think everybody has in their packet. This is just a summary of everything we've done for 2023. I encourage you, I'm not going to take time to read all of it, but I encourage you to look at it and just remember some of the things that we've done. There's some really great information. It's a good read, particularly the insert inside has a report out for everything that's been happening with the committees. So I would actually read not your committee that you sit on, but maybe the other one and see what's been going on in those committees. We do report on those every quarter, but just a good summary of what's going on. And of course, we are highlighted on the inside left bottom cover of our service project last year, so we'll make sure we get photos for the next year's one. But any questions about the annual report? This is just basically our journaling and historical evidence of the work we've done over the last year. Okay. Awesome. I'll also take 10 minutes on that. Did you want to do that? No, we're good.
We're good.
Cool.
I don't think that
was on. We'll put it together.
Huh?
We'll
put it
together.
Well,
our staff.
The staff put together.
They were with you guys.
Yeah, they reached out and asked us for feedback and are very helpful in writing more scripts when needed. Very great.
Thank you.
In fact. Okay. Who has the great Kevin? Kevin, you have the great pleasure of giving us our annual public meetings training. I just want to let everybody know that this is the first time I've had this. But I'm so excited. So we do have to have annual public meeting. We have to focus. We are a public meeting, so we will turn the time over to Kevin for our training so we are compliant.
Hi there, I'm Kevin. So I'm one of the staff attorneys for DWS. Normally I don't hang out here. I'm substituting for Elliot Lawrence today, but DWS needs someone else. So I'm stepping in. Just quick background. My area is for DWS, I do the non-discrimination equal opportunity compliance, particularly for WIOA, and then I also advise USOR. So there's a little bit of overlap with what I do and kind of what some of the work this board does.
Utah State Office of Rehabilitation.
Yeah.
That was great. Great.
So, yeah, so as we mentioned already, every public body in the state needs to have annual training about the Open and Public Meetings Act. All right, so if there's one thing I want you to remember about this training, it's that the law is called Open and Public Meetings Act for a reason. And that is because the point and the intent of the law is that all the public bodies conduct its business and deliberate and makes its decisions, takes actions openly. We like public participation, and we want the public to be able to participate. So that's the really important thing. All right. just a few things. Just go over a couple definitions here quickly. We talked about what I mean by public life. I keep using that term. So basically, any administrative or advisory committee, council, board, commission of the state or political subdivision that is either created by law, that's created by law, has two or more people, spends, distributes, or is supported by tax revenue, and has authorities to make decisions about the public's business. So this board here is a public body. You specifically do have a state statute that kind of creates you. You're also mandated by federal law, and then we have a corresponding state law that goes over what you are and what you do. All right, next slide. So, meetings. I just want to talk about what constitutes a meeting. So, a convening of a public body with a quorum present. Quorum means a simple majority. Either in person or through electronic communication to discuss or act on a matter under its authority or advisory power. So this includes things like workshops or executive sessions of the public body could count. Now, chance and social gatherings are not considered meetings. So if, I think there's 38 of you on this board. So let's say 20 of you decide after this meeting to go across the street and grab some lunch and just chat. That's not a meeting. But if you do that and you start talking about business before the board, then you just started a meeting. So that's kind of the difference. And the point is you can't use like a chance or a social meeting to circumvent the requirements of having a public meeting. Next slide. Again, just a reminder, the default setting we work on is the meeting is open to the public. There are a few exceptions we'll talk about that are pretty rare. But again, the default setting is meetings are open to the public. So, next off, I'm going to talk about, notice is basically what we need to do before the meeting. And the important thing is notice because it doesn't do much good if the meeting's open to the public if the public doesn't know about it. So, the key number here is 24 hours. That's the bare minimum notice we have to give to the public about an upcoming meeting. I'll talk about the one circumstance where that might be waived, but incredibly rare. So what does the notice need? Well, it needs the date and time and location of the meeting. And if there's an electronic option or the meeting's electronic, then we have the information about how someone can participate electronically. And that'd be something like the link to WebEx or Zoom or whatever, so someone can log on and participate. It also needs the agenda. Now, the agenda is basically the topics you're going to talk about. And they need to be specific enough so somebody reading the agenda can know what the topics are going to be. Each topic needs to be listed as a separate agenda item. At the discretion of the presiding member of the public body, if someone in the public raises a topic, the board can talk about it. But if the topic was not listed on the agenda in advance, you can't take any action on it. So no votes or any kind of action on that. So that's kind of the key thing. So you know, and the last kind of requirement here, in addition to giving notice for each meeting, we also have to give kind of an annual notice of kind of our schedule for the meetings for the upcoming year. So, next slide. So how do we give notice? Now this has changed this year a little bit. So there's kind of a couple ways we give notice. There's three ways we give notice. So first, we place notice on Utah Public Notice website. And that's basically the centralized location where all the boards and commissions and public bodies in Utah put their public notices for their meetings. We also, and this part is new this year as well, this is the new part, is we place notice on the board's website. And the board does have a website on the DWS. It has a webpage on the DWS's website. You put notice there as well. And that requirement, just going to geek out for a second, they call it like a Class A requirement because basically EWS is a big entity with a larger budget, so therefore we should have the means to put notices on our website. If we're doing an electronic meeting, we need to post in the notice the anchor location. So electronic meeting has what they call like an anchor location. This is obviously the anchor location. So those are the requirements. Some of you that may serve on other boards, if it's like a smaller board or like a, like say like a special services district or like a school board or something, they have a specific geographical area that they call like the affected area. And the notice needs to be kind of geared towards that affected area. Since you are a statewide board, your affected area is the whole state. Alright, next slide. Oh, you need one more. So that's just a picture. Yeah, that was kind of a snapshot of kind of what the notice looks like if you go to like the public notice website. You go, next slide. Yeah, there it is. Okay, I just want to talk about electronic meetings real just quickly. This is, so electronic meeting is if you have one or more board members participating remotely, like either through telephone or video conference. A couple of requirements to mind. You do need to have a previously adopted kind of resolution about electronic meetings. Just FYI, I know DWS is working on a administrative rule that's going to apply to all the public bodies in DWS as far as electronic meetings go. So.
We did make an amendment to our bylaws a while ago.
Right. So a lot of the boards and committees already have kind of like a bylaw or something already in effect. We're just kind of centralizing everything. The other thing is provide notice about how someone can attend in person or remotely, and that's just a notice, and establishing an anchor location to appear. There is a rare exception if for some reason, say like a pandemic is raging or something, we might not have to have, you know, we can close the anchor location of public. But again, those are pretty kind of a more rare circumstance. But generally, we have an anchor location so people can choose if they want to show up in person or participate electronically. Let's do the next slide. So I'm going to talk briefly about emergency meetings. This is the one time where you don't have to give 24-hour notice. So I will say, though, in kind of all my years, I've probably advised over a dozen, you know, various public bodies in the state. I've seen this happen once in kind of some unusual circumstances. So this is quite rare, but it is an option if we need it. Basically, what it is if there's some unforeseen circumstances and the public body needs to act on some sort of urgent matter. So basically, you can't wait to give the proper notice. Again, highly unlikely this would ever apply to this board, but it is an option. And what happens in these situations is we provide the best notice as possible, which includes the time and place of the emergency meeting. We tend to notify all the members of the public body. Again, that's good luck as we've been learning to do. But the majority of members do need to approve the emergency meeting, and the minutes need to include the reason why we had the emergency meeting. So, anyway, just keep that in mind. We'll have that in our back pocket if we need it. Go to the next slide. So, moving on, I'm going to talk about closed meetings. And this is, I think, giving notice and closing meetings are like the two kind of trouble areas I see. And usually when there's an issue that blows up with compliance with the open and closed, it's going to be either almost all the time, it's either about improper notice or improper closing of the meetings. So again, remember, we're starting with the default of the meetings open to the public. But a meeting may be closed for, there's a couple reasons why they might be closed. The ones listed there on that slide are the ones that are, you know, most likely to apply to this board, although, again, probably not. So a couple of things, like if you're discussing an individual's character, professional competence, or physical or mental health, strategy sessions to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation, discussions about security personnel, investigative proceedings about allegations of criminal conduct, or discussing specific elements of the procurement process. So if you're talking about like trade secrets or buying some real estate or something, that might be a reason you could go into a closed session. Now, how we close the meeting, two-thirds of the board need to vote to close the meeting. And the votes are closed, and the reason that we close the meeting needs to be put into the minutes. Now, one thing I'll point out, this is sort of the kind of the pro tip for the day. All the meetings start in open session. So if the meeting's like beginning in closed session or ending in closed session, then we're doing something wrong. So just keep that in mind. And I've seen committees sometimes where they'll open the meeting, they'll have a couple minutes in closed session, but by nature, a lot of their stuff needs to be in closed session. And they'll spend most of the time in closed session, but they always open the meeting publicly, and then they close the meeting publicly. So just keep that in mind. And then the other thing too, and this is the one thing I'll mention. A couple of things about when you go into closed session. You can't take any final action. No votes. No agreement, anything. You have to do that in public. Now, this is the other kind of pro tip that I've seen happen sometimes. This is more inadvertent. This is kind of an inadvertent issue that comes up. But sometimes we'll see before they'll go into closed session to talk about a specific matter. But then that topic raises kind of another topic, which raises another topic. And before long, the board's no longer talking about the actual topic that they went into closed session for. Just kind of watch topic creep if you ever go into closed session. Just keep it very strictly on the reason that you need to go into closed session. All right, we go to the next slide. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about recording the minutes and the recording of this. This is like kind of a requirement. I view this as sort of this is what we need to do during and after the meeting. And so this is really more for staff, but I think it's good for the board to know this just so, you know, you have kind of a basic understanding and often ask the right questions. So, a recording and written minutes must be made of the entire meeting. Now, this does apply to both open and closed sessions of the meeting. There is one exception. If you're in closed session and discussing private information about a person or security measures, or if you're one of the specific things listed in the act when the meeting shall be closed, those you do not have to take minutes or you can actually turn the recording off. But the presiding official has to sign an affidavit that about the reason they went into a closed session and why there aren't any minutes or recording of that particular being a closed session. Now, the recording and written minutes from open meetings are public records. The recording written minutes from the closed sessions of a meeting are what we call protected records under state law. Basically, they can only be disclosed by a court order or some other intervening law. So the requirement that we have for our minutes, and this is like basic stuff, so like date, time, place of the meeting, name of all the board members present or absent, all the matters proposed, discussed, decided, individual votes on each matter, and the name and substance of information given by individuals at the hearing after being recognized by the presiding officer. Kind of like the public comment section of the meeting. So, just some due dates. The minutes must be posted before approval at the next meeting. So the time frames kind of break down like this. So after the meetings, we have 30 days to post the pending minutes. Once those minutes are approved, we have 3 business days to post the approved minutes. And then also after the meeting, we have 3 business days to post the audio recording or a link to it. I did check we're doing that. So where we post that is we post that on the state public meeting notice website. We also have it on the board's website as well, I think. So the written minutes, once they're approved, become the official record of the action taken at the minutes, or at the meeting. Okay, the next slide. Yeah, sorry, And this way, I apologize, it's like a little bit of a, I kind of need to end on like a downer, but, this is the enforcement back. Really the main point here is, this is something that our legislature meant for all the public bodies of this board to take seriously about having meetings that are open and accessible to the public. There are consequences for not complying with this. Those can range from an action that a board takes could be overturned. If somebody ends up suing the board for violating that, there could be attorney's fees involved. So, but the way I look at it is, because we do training, we have big staff, we're not going to get in that territory. So, and that's always the thing, too. If any questions we have, that's what I need to do. And that's what the staff should do, is just to make sure the board can focus on, you know, the good work it does and how it's in compliance with our laws. Anyway, that's my presentation. Unless there's any questions, I'm finished.
You have been informed and educated and trained. Thank you very much. I do have a question for you. I was in a meeting the other day, and it says you can't take action in a closed meeting, but you can at least motion to get out of the closed meeting, right? You have to motion to get out and get approval? I'm serious. You said you can't take action. I'm like, how do we get out of it then? We can't act to get out of it. Can't have to open back up. You just trained on that. You have to open and close in the middle. Squish.
Well, the way I look at it, you're kind of taking like action on action. All right. So, would you have to like have a formal motion to leave? I think you would need. I don't know.
It's tricky.
I don't know. Like, this is my take. I don't know if you need, like, a final vote. If I remember, like, an official, like, I motion to close session. I think you do need consensus amongst the board.
Okay, we're ready to get out of close session.
Okay,
everybody ready?
Yeah, anyone okay. Ready to stay in? That's my
I'm just
side.
Curious.
It's not like... Like, what's the action take here? The action take is to go back to my open session, but...
And then likely take action on whatever you discuss in close. Thank you. I have two boards doing two different things. I was just curious which was correct. Thank you very much. Oh. All right. Okay, so the next thing is not me again. Yay. But if you'll remember last year, we had a discussion about the ABLE program, and there we had, like... It was the most engaging board conversation we've had in years, I felt like. It was very exciting. And so we felt like it was probably time to circle back around to it. And I felt like there were so many people at the workforce that was like, oh my gosh, these resources are incredible. I have a lot of employees that could take advantage of these types of services. Families. And so we felt like it was time to come back around. So, Jalene, are you ready to give us all the information about ABLE?
I am certainly ready.
Okay, then you have to be as loud as me.
That sounds good. I have no problem with that.
Right. Okay. It's all about behind me. I don't want that. I'm moving.
I am very excited to talk about ABLE today. And you guys are going to have to shut me up. I can keep going. First of all, I would like to... direct you to PAC information. So we have the ABLE, you can't tell, but this is the RAC card or the brochure. And I can get you more of these, or you can speak with Sarah, and we can get you more of these that are more of the, like this size. But also, this sheet here gives you more in-depth information, and I'm going to be talking a little bit more about this information. So, I want to talk a little bit about ABLE accounts today. So, we'll start with this slide right here. So, let's go back to the beginning one. So, How many of you have heard of ABLE savings accounts? Just a couple.
Only because I was into this last year and that was the first time.
By the way, I was really excited. Erin pointed out that we made it into the annual report. So, thank you very much, Sam. So ABLE savings accounts are, they allow individuals with disabilities the ability to save and invest money beyond the traditional resource limits that are there for state programs and federal programs. So if somebody applies for Medicaid benefits or Supplemental Security Income or SSI benefits through Social Security, they can't have more than $2,000 in resources like money in the bank or assets before they become disqualified for those benefits. And so you can't have more than $2,000 in assets. So what can you do? That really sticks people in poverty. So the ABLE account program for Utah started in September of 2021. And we partnered with Stable Ohio to be able to offer stable accounts for individuals with disabilities so that they could save more than that $2,000 and not risk losing their health care and other benefits. So they can save more than the $2,000, and Medicaid can't look at it, and Social Security can't look at it, so they can save more money and not risk losing things. Now, also, again, it allows you to save over $2,000 and keep all your benefits. That's so important because it really allows people to kind of work themselves a little bit more out of poverty and be able to have that money. Go ahead and go on to the next slide. So, and then the nice thing also is ownership. So when you can save that money, also you have the ownership. The individual with a disability owns that money. They are the account holder. They can make the decisions on if they save it in a regular savings type account or if they want to invest it. The ABLE account has four investment programs in the account so that based on your kind of gut level of being willing to invest, you can go conservative or high risk as far as investing your money in the account. So they can talk to other people and say, you know what, I'm investing money right now. So when you talk to other people about your investment, hey, that's something that a person with a disability can say, can have that conversation with other people and say, you know what, I'm investing money as well. They have that financial independence as well so that they can have more money. It's such a restriction to be able to just always have to watch your account to have less than $2,000. Now, this is a separate account, so you can't save it in your regular bank account. This is a separate account. And then there are also tax benefits. So one thing that the state of Utah set up when they set up the ABLE program for Utah is that when you contribute to the ABLE program, an individual's ABLE program, you can get a 5% tax credit on all contributions that you put in. So if you put in money for your child's ABLE program, you can have a 5% tax credit that you take on your taxes at the end of the year. So that's a real benefit. And I heard you talking about, you know, how employers might be able to do this. This is something that's really important. Employers can provide those ABLE contributions to individuals with their ABLE account. And also, you can encourage your employees to do a direct deposit into their children's ABLE account, and then that they could take that 5% tax credit on their taxes at the end of the year. And that could be a real benefit to the employees. So the tax benefits are really large. It's another really nice thing that the if someone is receiving those SSI or supplemental security income benefits, usually if you're getting SSI and you get a gift, or if you get money from a grandparent or a parent, that counts as income. So your SSI check goes down based on the money that you receive from that person. But if they put the money into the ABLE program rather than give you the cash, then it doesn't affect your SSI check. They can just put that money, they can gift you that money into the ABLE account, and that doesn't affect your SSI check. So that's another really great benefit of the ABLE account. Go ahead and go to the next one. The next thing, and this is written on the paper that I gave you. So for funding your account, if you're not employed, if the individual who owns that account is not employed, so the individual with the disability, you can put in up to $17,000 a year into that account. It's not a lot of money. You can even potentially roll over a 529 account into an ABLE savings account. And then if you are employed, if the individual is employed, you can put in an additional, $13,590 from employment. So that really opens up the ability for an individual with an ABLE account to again work and be able to save more money. Now it's important to know that any money that you earn as a person on Social Security still counts as income, but the money you put into the ABLE account is protected from Social Security and Medicaid. But it allows you to save that additional money. Because that's what people run into when they're working, is you make more money and you have the ability to save more money. And then the lifetime limit is, you can save up to, currently, this year, it's $523,000. That's a lot of money. We haven't made it up to that high, and nobody's made it up to that high. If you're on SSI, you can save up to $100,000 a year before Social Security would start counting that. And if I do another presentation, we can talk about that. But after $100,000, they would start counting it. But then if your account went under $100,000, it would be okay again. So it really allows you the opportunity to save, to accumulate wealth without jeopardizing your eligibility for the benefit programs. I've talked to people, actually I did a presentation with somebody who saved in her ABLE account and was able to purchase a house with the money that she saved in the ABLE account, which was amazing to be able to do that. The choice to work more hours and earn and save more, and the chance of changing your financial plan from month to month to thinking from year to year rather than what am I going to do this week or this month to be able to have more money in there. Go ahead and go to the next slide. So we talked about putting money into the account. Let's talk about how you spend the money. Because there are some restrictions on how you can spend the money, but they're not really restrictive. They're not very restrictive. So the IRS has said that it has to relate to the disability and help maintain or improve health, independence, or quality of life. But the big thing here is there's no definitive list of what they call a qualified disability expense is. So when you spend the money out of your account, it has to be for something that helps you maintain or improve health, independence, or quality of life. And examples of that would be housing and rent, basic living expenses, transportation, education, assistive technology, health and wellness, legal fees, financial management. I talked to a gentleman a couple months ago, and he says, well, if I end up buying a house, or when I get married, having a house, like if my water heater goes out, could I use my ABLE account for that? And I said, would it help you feel better if you had hot water? Yes. So why not? Why couldn't you do that? And so it really opens up. So as long as you can say it helps improve your health, independence, or quality of life, you can probably justify that for a qualified disability expense. And so we have had really good success in Utah, and nationally, there has been a lot of success with ABLE accounts. We are really getting the word out in Utah, and it's been really exciting. Do you have questions so far before we go through the numbers? And you will not. Yeah.
Anybody down in the same portion of Utah that is familiar with the program?
The program, yes. And actually, I'm going to be traveling in November and talking to some people down in southern Utah. One thing that I didn't mention is right now, in order to be eligible for an ABLE account, you have to have had what's called the onset of your disability before age 26. So your disability has to start before 26 years old. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be under 26. You can, when we talked to the original Ohio people, they said, you know, we have a lady in her 90s that has an ABLE account right now. But her disability started before age 26. And then just last year, Congress authorized what's called they basically authorized the Age Act so that the age changed. So in January of 2026, that age will go up to 46. So starting in January of 2026, you just have to have your disability before age 46. And the hope is that it will open up for a lot of veterans. They were hoping that it would open up for over a million veterans, that they would be able to do this. So, yeah. So this is a really good tool for children to be able to, their parents to be able to save money for them for the future. Also looking at when they turn 18 years old, they're going to be potentially applying for Social Security benefits, and to be able to have that money in the bank that Social Security won't be able to look at. But then also for other older individuals that are looking to work or potentially able to save some money, that they want to have money and be able to save money. So you can go ahead and go to the next slide. Okay, so I put on this last slide, our website is ableut.com. So it's administrated through the Department of Workforce Services. So it's kind of odd that it has a .com address, but it does. So it's easy to remember, ableut.com. And it only takes about 20 minutes to enroll in an ABLE program, in the ABLE Utah program. And they have individuals that can help you through that process. There's a toll-free telephone number, And then they also have an online chat to help people through the enrollment process. I've also put my email address, because I'm the ABLE outreach person for Utah. So if you have further questions, I can certainly either answer them or get you to someone that you can answer them. So right now, Utah has over 800 accounts, and we have $3.4 million in assets under management. So Utahns are saving over $3.4 million in the ABLE account. So that's pretty amazing.
And when we started, we had how many account holders? It was like 42.
Yeah.
I mean, it was teeny, so
it's really
Individuals could save using a national program, but nobody knew about it. It wasn't marketed Utah, and when we started, we were basically the outreach arm of the program, and it's really made a difference. And Jolene and her team do a great job. They learned this in addition to some other work they do with benefit planning and Social Security, and have done a really good job getting the word out. So, but we want to keep getting the word out because it's a really good resource.
I have three questions.
Yes.
Okay. The first one is, based on what I'm reading here, it's not like the 401k. You can access it at any time you want. That sounds pretty obvious. I'm not educated enough to know at what age level you become eligible for SSI and SSDI benefit. So how young can a parent start contributing to a kid's account? How young can a child be?
A baby.
Really? Okay, I wanted to know that.
Yeah, one more question.
Okay. Oh, I do know. Is it like the IRS contributions to like your HSA and your 401k? Have we seen over the last 3 or 4 years like the limit kind of reflect inflation increase like $17,000 this year, but maybe next year $18,000?
That's a great question.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
It goes up every year. So in 2023, it's $17,000, and the IRS has increased that amount.
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to be for 2024, but we have seen an increase in the contribution amount every year so far.
It's not staying.
Not
okay. Great. Thank you. Anyone else?
So you mentioned you don't go to a regular bank and set up those accounts. So if an individual has needed to contact you or reaches out to you to set up an account, do you actually take care of the setting up of the account with the financial institution that handles those funds?
No, it's actually set up through the Stable account, through ABLE Utah. But we contract through the Stable program.
Ohio contracts with a third party to do the financial piece. So Stable, or Ohio started it. They got a bunch of states to come on board to help pay for it, I think. But then there's a third party that actually is the financial institution.
Yeah. That's well.
Thank you. This is an amazing program. It's something that I know that when we talk about it among our employee resource groups at work, to let them know we have employees that have children with disabilities, or if they themselves have a disability, it's a great resource for them that so many people aren't aware of. And
Sean has a question.
Yeah. So going to the third party, are these accounts insured?
So
FDIC insured?
The savings type program, which is called the Bank Save program, is FDIC insured, and then the four investment programs are Vanguard investment programs. So, but yes, the Bank Save or the savings type and program is FDIC insured. Yes. And with our ABLE program, I looked at the most recent report, and 58% of individuals are employed, and an additional 7% are self-employed. So that's pretty impressive.
Okay, any other questions for Jolene? Any questions online?
And again, my email was on that PowerPoint, so please email me if you have questions. or would like more information.
And if you can't remember that, you can email me and I will get you to the right place. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay. Kim has to be gone. So Nicole is going to talk to us about the WIO estate plan. The 300-page document that everyone in here has read.
So Megan kind of alluded to it already, but we are in the process of updating our WIO estate plan. So I just kind of wanted to give a heads up and kind of spearheading that effort to update the estate plan, and we'll be coordinating with all the chairs and co-chairs and the committee to get updated action plans for you all for the new year and outline what efforts your committee wants to work on. So between now and the end of the year, she'll be connecting with you and talking more about that. And then in our January meeting, we'll kind of share more of an update around the state plan. We'll have a draft around that same time and be having a town hall meeting that we are going to include you all on the invite for. So if you are able to attend, we would love to have you attend. We haven't had them be very heavily attended in the last couple of years that we've had them, but we would love to have you and have your insights for any questions that members of the public may have.
So just, you don't have to read 300 pages. We have executive summaries, but remember in your committees, your chairs will be reaching out. You'll read your section and just make sure that it's reaching the goals that we need to accomplish, whether it's with regard to career pathways or youth or apprenticeship or whichever committee that you're on. We just need to gut check it. Like I said, our plan is solid. We need to make sure we update data that you know, if any of our demographics or have shifted or our goals have shifted based on, you know, if we look at it, I just remember in the 9 years I've been here, we had, you know, high unemployment and low unemployment, high unemployment and low unemployment, and generally the plan follows that. So we've got to update it and make sure that it's reflective of what's happening in our state right now and what we need to do to keep growing our economy and our workforce. Anything else on that? Okay. Next is Zach. So if you'll look at your, and we totally did not give this justice last meeting. Like I gave Dave 30 seconds. You can have a full 5 minutes. Okay, so if you will pull this out and just follow along with Zach if he highlights what you guys have been doing for the last 90 days.
All right, good afternoon. I'm Zach Lovell. Nice to see everyone out here today. I recognize most everyone. I'm not going to read through all of it. I'm just going to pull out a few highlights. And then feel free to reach out to me afterwards if you have any specific questions, or if you're interested in seeing an IT services that your company or other company you're aware of in your area. We had a few different job fairs and hiring events going on throughout Utah, all the way up, one of the biggest ones in the state, at Utah Valley Convention Center in Utah County. Just under 3,000 job seekers attended, and our staff were a big help in locating employers and having to attend and the new job opportunities they have available. All the way down to Delta, Utah, with one of the small Great Lakes cheese content recruitment. I don't think they had 3,000 individuals at that job fair, but still a very vital importance for that small community in the area there. On the second page, one of the things I want to highlight is our rapid response services. This is an example of a company that utilizes services in the past 90 days. Has a really good example of what we try to bring to the table when an employer is going to a layoff affecting multiple individuals, in this case 100 individuals. We like to try to bring not just the resources for those affected employees of, hey, what's the next step, what the unemployment interest looks like, what are some resources for you, but also try to bring, in this case, we've brought six different employers as well to this location. And, hey, here are some employers that are looking for the same skill sets that the affected employees are where their skill sets are at, trying to make connections there, had four different workshops, about 70 of the 100 individuals attended, several individuals got hired through that event. So that's kind of a good example of one service that, yes, is always detrimental when there's a layoff going through, especially for those affected, but here are some ways to try to turn that around and get people that quickly use other support and resources with that. One of the other highlights is She's not here today, I don't believe, but Sarah Jones, who's one of our board members, had moderated a diversity, equity, and inclusion roundtable. That was with Utah Business Magazine, and we had Ben Longinato, who's on the operations committee for the support staff there, as well as Lisa Duckworth, who's one of our veteran representatives, on that roundtable and through that discussion and stuff there. We appreciate Sarah reaching out and saying, hey, can you guys join and have a part with that. In addition to the simple highlights for a future event, I'd like to point out, there are some flyers in your packet, so there are attached to your flyers. One of the events is we have our on-site, we back that up, a virtual job fair in November. The flyers in your packet has incorrect dates, so we will get that information sent out to you guys in an email, but it's on November 2nd at 10 o'clock. So you can flag that.
This one already happened.
So it is November 2nd, 10 o'clock. We'll have additional flyers up to you guys. Put that on your calendar. Great event for you to the virtual job fairs. We have the individuals from all the state come in, especially if you have some.
Has anybody done the virtual fairs at their company that's around the table? Has anybody done them?
Maybe you have.
Yeah, they're pretty great. And for those of you, if you can kick these to your HR team, all you have to ask the HR person to sit at their desk and multitask. And, the setup's great, the visuals are great, and then if somebody pops into your booth, then you just talk to them for a few minutes, and then they pop out. So there's not a lot of effort that has to go into it, but it does give you the opportunity to talk to some candidates just that might be perusing. So get it to your HR team. Good idea.
And your network.
And it's free.
Yeah.
And what HR manager doesn't want to hear, hey, just sit at your desk for a couple of hours and do work while you watch this prompt. Something pops in. Every HR manager wants that.
Thanks, Megan.
You're welcome.
One last heads up is going to be in November. We have an apprenticeship summit and job fair. That will be on November 14th. There is a flyer. Okay. I'm just going to... There's the flyer, there's the date, it is free, and Jolie, I'll just keep the rest of the title for you. The only other aspect on this, our quarterly agenda, is on the very left back page, there's a picture of the state of Utah with the different resources that are available in different areas. Still free, these are important resources to you as employers, to your networks, feel free to share that information out. You can see that mine is in that right-hand bottom corner. The tie is a little bit bigger than the list of staff names. We're a small team, but Eastern Utah, very proud to represent there. And encourage you guys, again, reach out, brainstorm, hey, Zach, if you have this issue or any of the other contacts, hope we can help out. We're happy to sit down and discuss that with you. Megan, I'm going to turn over to you.
Thanks. Okay. We are going to, Lindsay, how much time do we need to provide service?
10 minutes.
If nobody's going to object to getting out early, I don't think.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going to do committee updates. We will start with apprenticeship.
Zach, thanks for not stealing my thunder.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you. Just an update on a quarterly apprenticeship update. We've been preparing this last quarter for the annual report, which came out October 1st. That's available online if you don't see that. But great annual report there. The other items that that Zach alluded to is we have our apprenticeship summit coming up. You should have that flyer there. It's on that November 14th day. That's at the Rice Eccles Stadium. That'll be from 8:30 until 4:30. We got a lot of folks planning on participating with that, from employers to educators. I would say parents, students, anybody and everyone is welcome. That's a free event. And again, a lot of work and information is going out on that as far as the advertisement and those types of things. But you can see that the theme for that is innovate, collaborate, and elevate. And it's shaping Utah's workforce through apprenticeships. And so, terrific event there. Grateful for the committee's work and DWS and their efforts on making that happen. This will be our third annual event for that summit. But
We'll have booths, we'll have instruction, we'll have resources, providers, job seekers, again, as I mentioned, counselors, parents. We've sent it out to all the CT instructors throughout the state. And so, again, a broad group of folks and individuals participating there. The other one that you have there is the apprenticeship job fair showcase there. So that will be immediately following the summit from 4:30 until 7. Should be a terrific event. So if you're not planning on attending or haven't heard, please plan on putting it on your calendar and participating. As far as other, I'd say, updates with regards to the program, we've had 26 new programs this past year approved in apprenticeship in various industries throughout the state.
That's huge.
Yes,
that's so amazing. And not all in construction. That's so cool.
Ouch, that was me.
Sorry. Sorry.
We want them all.
Yeah, yeah. You can see the baseline layout on the model, but it's great to be having other industries.
It is. With those 26 programs and the current existing programs, we've had about 1,900 new apprentices enrolled this year, too. So some good work there. The last thing I'll mention is, I'll get the acronym incorrect, but through the state and DWS, we were awarded two grants this year. One is a base grant that's just under about $500,000, $500,000. That's, I would say, an ongoing dollar amount, right? I have that right. I want to make sure. For 5 years. I want to make sure I had that accurate. The other one is a competitive grant, which was about $5.3 million. So all said and told, about $5.8 million for pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeship. And one of the unique components of that is really the education portion of that with instructors and teachers on that grant process and apprenticeship opportunities. So super excited about that for the city. So I'd be amiss if I didn't say thanks to Lisa Stark, who's not been able to be here today, as well as Alexia Murphy and their support and help and assistance with the committee, as well as the entire DWS team and staff. They really make us look great as an apprenticeship group and help us succeed. So thank you for everything you do. Appreciate that.
Yay, such a good update. Very excited to hear updates on the teacher apprenticeship. Cannot wait to see what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Very excited. Okay, youth. Matt has been in this role for 6 days.
So you're saying he's really young. That's why he's appropriate.
So I think he officially said yes last Tuesday. So maybe 8-9 days. So I'm just going to let him speak on what he hopes and is planning to start doing.
That'll be great. Appreciate the opportunity. Lindsay and I will be taking a deep dive into the past goals and successes of the committee and see what we can learn from that and then try and enhance that as we move forward. Just really wasn't kidding about the transfer portal. There's also like this image name contracts available if anybody wants to jump. But we are going to try and get with all the folks that's on the committee right now and try and see if we can get a Zoom together or a meeting together next week to kind of just get everyone used to it with everyone else and kind of, for me, learn and see what's been done in the past and try and figure out how the best I can come up to speed as quickly as possible. I think at the end of the day, we are all committed to understanding that if we can tackle this situation with the youth, it'll help as they become adults so that we won't have to worry about that as much, hopefully. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, who we are, and we're excited to do some things. And anyone that's interested in joining the team, you can see myself or Lindsay, and we will welcome you with open arms. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Perfect. So excited to have you on board. Hey, Jenna.
Okay. The services for people with individuals with disabilities have been very busy. I'm going to say Lee does a lot. We have multiple opportunities. She's got great support with Sarah and her team. But some of the events have taken place in the last little while, or the 49th Annual Golden Keys Awards were held on September 21st at the Science Technology Building. It was a great event. We had 120 people that attended the event. They covered lots of topics like mental health and suicide awareness, things like that. We had a great keynote speaker, and we awarded several scholarships to deserving individuals. And even our keynote speaker awarded his stipend to an individual in the form of a scholarship, so that was kind of nice. The Large Employer of the Year Award went to Science Bank. Just if you want to know, you can look this up. There's a link in the package. You can read through your information. It's on this one right here. But there's a link in the package that will go through that. But I'll just briefly go over who the award winners were. The Potbelly is the Medium Employer of the Year. Johan Postnet was the Small Employer. Mountain America won the Freedom Award. And if you go on to the website, you can see what each of these awards represent, because they're pretty amazing. We had the Service Provider of the Year was Stitch Recover. And Zandrea Pullup with Amazon was awarded the ACE Award, which is an outstanding individual contribution. But she was the first deaf person at Amazon to earn her CDL. So that was pretty amazing. Go on, look at the videos for that. They're great. And then the next Golden Keys Award will be at the 50th Golden Keys Award. So we've been at this for a little while. And we don't have a date yet, but the nominations are open. So if you go on and you know companies and outstanding individuals that you'd like to nominate for those different categories, feel free to go on and make those nominations. The business relations team has been busy, and they are out in the community building relationships and conducting seminars. They do two biannual workshops for the employer workshops, and they typically held at the services for the blind and disabled, visually impaired, thank you. Yeah, it's fantastic. They work with employers on an individual basis and kind of educate them about different things that are available. And anyway, and then this year is the 50th anniversary for the Rehabilitation Act. So there's a lot of lessons learned that are available too through that Leah can provide if you're interested. You can get her email out to you guys if you'd like to learn about some of the lunch ones that are available.
Thank you, Diana. Okay, any questions about that committee? All right. Jennifer Saunders is going to be our new Career Pathways Chair. She's been in that role for 60 days, maybe not even that many, I can't remember. So she's taking on that role, kind of her first quarterly meeting with the executive board. So she also has been doing some behind-the-scenes work before she gets in with her committee, so I'm just going to let her share a couple of things, too.
Thanks. And even though Matt not quite on a full court press, but you know, compelling and clearly an engaging personality, I want to say that you know our committee will welcome you. One of the things that I found interesting, because I didn't know until I talked about this, but the Career Pathways is actually, if I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's an area that is not specifically identified by federal law that our plan needs to have or that this board needs to contain. And what I think about that as a unique opportunity is that not only is health represented in the plan, but also how we map that out as a committee and work together as, among other committees. There's a lot of, I think, freedom to identify what would make sense for Utah and to define it in a way that I think connects all the different focus areas that we use and individuals with disabilities, adult
work people that are looking for new career pathways as well as youth. And so I think that really got me thinking too, okay, well, what do we want to envision for ourselves as a board and as a work group? And I've shared this, I think a couple of you heard me say this already, the way career pathways, which is the term pathways, has many meanings from many areas with higher ed, how higher ed uses the term, or our K-12 partners, as well as what it means for certain industries is different. I think this is an opportunity to say, well, even if we can't have the same definition, at least we can understand that in this way, this is how we're defining this, and this is how it we're going to describe it and for our work and what it can mean for the different areas and different populations. So I think it's exciting work. I think there's really an opportunity to not only build on the longstanding work of the committee to date, but now, as a new kind of group of individuals working together with the next next stage.
Thank you so much. Jennifer's very passionate about this, well, about the program she works with already in her day job, but this will just help elevate that and pull some more things together. So I'm very excited. Thank you so much. And then operations committee, Gary was not able, he was like triple booked with some veteran stuff today, and I think with the governor's office as well. And so Dan was on here. I'm not sure if Dan wants to give us an update. He can watch it. Took his camera off. Maybe, or my camera went off. Yes.
I'm here.
For some reason, the camera disappeared online, and I thought, just when I asked, that was so funny. But Dan, can you maybe give us an update on operations? I know we went out to vote on two things for the surveys, and then also just the one-stop certification that you just had.
You bet. Just three quick things. We met last Friday. Samantha Tay from Department of Workforce Services came and joined us as a guest speaker. And it was in relation to House Bill 181. And for the group, if you don't recall, this is a requirement that the Department of Workforce Services jobs.utah.gov performs an update to the employer and job seeker screens that gives the opportunity for employers to be friendly towards those with criminal backgrounds. Samantha did a great job of presenting to the group. There was quite a bit of discussion and some direction that we provided to her, and she's planning to come back and bring some additional update before that is formalized in the system. More to come on that one. And then two other items. We did talk about the WIOA plan, and the operations committee is planning to review its goals on November 13th. And then lastly, there was indeed a certification in Tooele. Group showed up and took care of that. Both Aaron and Stephanie gave great updates on that certification, and we are in the process of scheduling a price certification in November.
That is great. And while you just introduced that, I believe, Dan, that Tooele passed. Is that correct?
Say that again.
That they passed their certification, that is the recommendation to pass them on their certification. Yes. Is that correct?
Yes, okay, it was.
So Sean, you were there, correct? Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I just want to say it was phenomenal.
Isn't it so fun?
Yes, it was great meeting with people that run the entire operation. To dig in deep and learn, I was told this before when I first got on the board, I implore you to go and do one of these, and I'm behind that now. But there's no other way to really dive deep into understanding the work that's done by individuals in each of these satellite locations. So it was a very positive experience.
Thank you so much. Would you be willing to entertain a motion, because the board needs to approve Tooele's certification officially? Would you?
Yes, I'll make that motion.
Okay. So I have a motion to approve Tooele certification and recertify them as a American Job Center one-stop in the state of Utah. I need a second.
I second.
Thank you, Dan. I'm going to take that one now. Any discussion on that? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved. Lesson, tell your team. Congrats.
I'm telling them right now.
I had the opportunity to certify the Tula Center the first time we did it virtually. And even it was the first virtual one, and they gave the best virtual tour for us so that we could see it. I'm so glad you guys were able to go in person. There is a great group of people out there in Tula serving that area of the state. So thank you so much for that. As Dan mentioned, there is an opportunity for Pride coming up soon, we believe in November 16th. So if anybody, thank you, Sean, for your testimonial on that. I'm telling you, it should just be a requirement for any new board member as part of their orientation. So if you haven't had an opportunity, it really is the best way to get a deep dive into what we're trying to do here. So if you would like to sit on that one, if you could reach out to myself or to Nicole, if you'd like to go, we try to get at least 4 board members to that. If you're like, oh my gosh, it's Christ, that's not close to me, we still have opportunities as the next year comes up, but if anybody would like to go to Christ, this is our third time.
It is.
Third time. I was there for the very first one. It was the first one we ever did, so third time around. So they got it down. And we approved a new audit check sheet last year, so it's a little bit different, and the first time we did it took us 8 hours, so it's about for now, so that's good. Last 2 things, I just would like to encourage everybody to take a look at next year's dates. Natalie will be sending these out soon to get on your calendar, but even everybody online, we have 4 meetings next year. It's the second Thursday of the first month of the quarter, which is kind of a mouthful. But check this out. Just remember that this is where Megan would like you to be that day, if you can. We'd really appreciate that. If you can, please let Natalie know. Also, remember that our acronym is SWDB, State Workforce Development Board. If you see that in the subject line of an email, you should read it and engage in that email at some level. I'm requesting that. That's my expectation. And I feel like as the chair, I can make that expectation. So if you see that in the subject line of your email, you read it and do as it's instructing you to do in the email. Please. I really appreciate that. Any other business that we need to talk about?
Well, I just would like to recognize that Megan received a Transformational Leadership Award at the Rural One Utah Summit, and from her leadership here, you can see why. So,
thank you. I really appreciate that. I love this board. I love what we do. My job just changed last week, and this was the one board that I advocated to keep and not leave off, so thank you for letting me stay. Because if you remember, if you change jobs, you have to tell us. And I was still approved to stay, which is really great. I'm so grateful to be here. So we do have our service project that we would like. It's apparently going to be back this year. It's not going to take a lot. Remember that we... we're collecting school supplies, for those of you that, and this one's a little more tender for me now since I'm on the school board. Our teachers work really hard, and we also know that many of our school districts have students in poverty, and a lot of the teachers are digging into their pockets to supply a lot of school supplies. If you did not have the opportunity to donate, then I recommend you just go home, buy something, and take it to your school. They'll use it. But in the meantime, we're going to put some stuff together, but I do need to ask if there is any public comment so I can follow open meeting law.
And I have just a very quick clarification. I just got your question. Closing.
The attorney. You can't sleep until we figure it out.
Well, I
thought
the code. On that.
Okay.
And I have to remember the TV now. So it says, a public body may not take a vote in a closed meeting except for a vote on a motion to end the closed portion of the meeting and return to an open meeting.
Excellent.
Now, it is silent on whether you have to take a vote, so that's kind of like a disagree better thing. Probably the same thing, that's not going to hurt either.
Perfect, thank you for that clarification. Any other public comment? I don't think we have any public comment online. With that, if you're online, go buy 10 boxes of crayons and take it to your local school district. And if you're, I need a motion to adjourn. And if you can stay, please help us. They'll give us instructions in the back on what we need to do, and we're adjourned until January 11th.
Thank you so much, everyone, for your donations. Sorry,
No, I didn't hear you say